Welcome to the December 8th School Board Discussion Session. It's 1 p.m. and we are being audiotaped. I'd like to call this discussion meeting to order. And welcome to everybody. I'd like to go through the items placed on the agenda by board meetings, and we will come back to Mr. Searcy since he's not in attendance at this moment. Ms. Jimenez, would you like to...
Yes, I would just like to follow up on the conversation I brought up at the last board meeting about having a conversation about our meeting locations. During my time on the board, I have been trying to get my fellow board members to hold the school board meetings at different locations because I feel that that is a way of allowing the community to see us throughout the community so it's not a fixed location, and so that maybe more parents are able to participate and also for the board members to be present at some of our schools. And every time it's been brought up, it's been rejected, and I thought maybe it's time to bring it up again and just have the conversation. As you know, that's all we can do is have a conversation, be open-minded, listen to each other's opinions, and then make a decision. So I'd like to ask my colleagues to entertain that possibility and maybe have a conversation of the advantages and disadvantages of doing so. So I appreciate your willingness to hear my request. Thank you.
As I mentioned in the business meeting, I'm open to discussing this. My key concerns, and I agree with the sentiment 100%, and I do know that other districts, like our friends in Collier County, they go down to Immokalee, they have to meet some meetings in Naples, they travel around, particularly to areas where it would be difficult for the local folks to travel, whether it's lack of public transportation or what. So I would be completely open to the idea of having perhaps one or two of our meetings. Again, my concern with this is the difficulty in being available for the videotaping or things like that, being open to the rest of the community, if it would create a hardship for our audiovisual folks. So that would be, if I had a concern, that would be it. But I do agree that our meeting should be as engaging as possible, and to be held at an alternate site would be, I'd be comfortable experimenting with it for a moment.
Yeah, we've done a little bit of this in the past. I remember we had one board meeting at Fellsmere in their city hall. I don't remember having an actual board meeting anywhere else. And that was part of the feedback we got, was it's real hard, you know, then it wasn't acceptable. It wasn't, they could tape it and it would be broadcast at a later date. People got upset because it wasn't on TV. So, I mean, I wouldn't care either way. I'd be open to having it if we wanted to, but again, we just need to make sure what kind of hardship is there. The other thing we did in terms of schools is we were, for a while there, we were having like discussion sessions, things like this, at individual school sites. We went over Rosewood one day, and we went to, we went to several of the schools, went to Glendale one day, and I said, we kind of stopped doing it, and it kind of died on its own. I'm not exactly sure why. I do know there was Dr. Okava, talking to him about it one time. He said there was a little bit of concern that the school has to make room available for us, and that, you know, it, there was a concern that it was a disruption in their school day by seeing all these strangers around. So, those are just all legitimate concerns, but, I mean, I wouldn't be averse to it, but we just need to make sure that the logistics work out for it.
I would agree. I think it's a great idea. I think that there's a lot of pros to it. The cons, I would defer to the superintendent to give us the logistics of it, let us know how that affects his staff, as well as being prepared to grab information. I would probably be more interested in like an evening discussion session at a school where, but that would allow public input, or call it a town hall, whatever way you want to do it, and traveling like that. In this day and age with streaming and our website, where you can even go back to past meetings, it's not that people can't get information, but maybe traveling. Yes, in Hillsborough, that's a large county, or group of ones that you speak of. We're somewhat central, and if people want to come down, I've seen them come down, and I certainly want to encourage participation, but I would like to hear from the superintendent his thoughts.
Sure. So after the board meeting where this was discussed, I talked with staff about the logistics of holding a regular board work, business meeting at a school location. And the television cameras and the remote would be a logistical ordeal to be able to televise live from a lot of those locations. But not something that we wouldn't explore if directed to do so, and would try to find a way to do it. As far as having an information session or a workshop would be televised again, so we'd face those same hurdles. But an information session like this, it's audio taped, that's just a matter of finding a room and making sure that the public has access and that kind of thing, and we could do that. That would be very easy to do. Maybe not what you're looking for, though. To have a business meeting at a school will present some logistical challenges, but we can explore that if that's what we're directed to do. And if we did that, then I think what we do is try to strategically place the schools, one in the north, we'll have one meeting in the north part of the county, one meeting in the south part of the county later on, and then maybe back to the central, that kind of thing. So not opposed to it at all, just would have to do some more research on exactly what it would entail, logistics-wise, and cost, if there's costs incurred as well.
Yeah, thank you for your consideration. I think, the intent behind this is to create greater transparency and accessibility to the work that the board is doing. And because it is only at the board meetings where we are allowed to have citizen input, because we don't have it at these meetings and we don't have it at workshops, I actually think that maybe having as part of our regular calendar information sessions in both North and South County, so that there's access where the board has a discussion session and has opportunities for there to be some interaction with the community, I think that would be better. I understand the challenges of logistics and wouldn't want to create, disruption in terms of that process, but I think anything that gets our board closer to being more accessible, because we tell people, well, email us, well, call us, but it's very different to have a face-to-face conversation with an individual. So maybe the board could consider scheduling information sessions so that we can have access and dialogue with the community to be more transparent, because a lot of times what we end up is with a lot of hearsay. He said, she said, he said, she said, and it would be wonderful to have opportunities to all the board members be present to the concerns that are coming from our community. So what could we do, Ms. Simchek, in order to kind of maybe move that forward if the board wanted to do that?
Well, from what I was hearing from the superintendent and what everybody weighed in, instead of going from we have a board meeting and no board meetings north and south, would we want to try the information that doesn't require broadcasting, try a north and south, within the next 6 months, so that we, would that be, how does that really be a decision, but if we had at least now we could stick our tail in the water and see how that works out to avoid logistic issues with the meeting location.
You're just going to have to find, it's going to have to be a place you can work with, with all the governmental units. You're going to have to find a place that the public's going to be allowed to come in.
Yep.
That's one thing. And when we had information sessions like this at school during the school day, it just happened that nobody showed up. I kind of figured that, and nobody did. But that's the thing. That was a much different time. Now we're in a time of much enhanced security. Schools are a lot more open than years ago.
Yes, ma'am. But would the intent, though, be to have them in the evenings? And if they are in the evenings, it could conceivably be at one of our schools. The cost would be having staff there to open, close, prepare. But we do that on a regular, or I know in the past we've done that on a regular basis for other types of events that the schools host. But of course it wouldn't be a school hosted event in that sense. We would be calling it, but using one of our facilities. So I would think it would have to be something in the evening if we want people to be able to participate.
So if I'm recapping what we've kind of discussed, that we want to be more transparent. We want to offer an opportunity for people to come out and actually exchange dialogue, and then perhaps an evening North and South County information to avoid just audio record. Mm-hmm. And then would it be safe to say that we all want to have the superintendent get back to logistics of that concept? Mm-hmm. Is that good with everyone?
I'd like to add one thing. There's a social media app called Periscope, and a lot of the political candidates use it, and it's linked with Twitter, and it's video live streaming, and it records the video, and as a record you can go back and look at it later, and it's kind of neat because it sends you a tweet whenever someone you follow is up on Periscope. So the video is running. If we want to engage our phone agents, we do it then, we just put it into the website of that video. It lives on Periscope until you take it down. And it just works on any web-enabled devices, tablets, or phones.
That would be on my information technology specialty, but I would be concerned and just want to make sure for public records, would we control that?
Okay. Yeah, so it would be the official Twitter account.
Right. The school district has a Twitter account. I have a Twitter account as well. We would tap off of those from the Periscope activity, probably the school district's Twitter account. We can easily at least advertise the meetings and stuff like that that way. And then we're going to get the word out that we're meeting in a different location at a different time. I will come back to you at the next, yes, ma'am, at the next information session with some ideas, some dates, some locations, and
meeting so that we could see what was in place for the cost of the attestation to the contractor if they go over a certain amount.
So if Mr. Morrison could join us up at the table, he has some documents that we'll pass around and he'll refer to those. So Mr. Morrison.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Morrison, first, if you could review the former policy.
Sure. I'm referring to the document that has the number page 20 at the bottom. It has red writing on it. What you're looking at is the construction manager at risk contract with the language, that the penalty language, if you will, reinserted back into the contract. So, the board had previous, this language was in the contract, and then the board removed it, and this is now bringing it back to be reinserted. So any projects that were contracted utilizing this document, any overcharged amount equal to $10,000 or greater, then the construction manager would have to pay for the cost of the attestation that is being done. So this was the original language being brought back into the construction manager at risk contract. So just to clarify, it wasn't a policy, it was language that was in the construction manager at risk contract at the time. The second document that I'm referring to, it says page 8 of 34 on the bottom. And this is staff's attempt at inserting language into our bid documents that will be sent out to all contractors whenever we're letting projects to say under cost of project. Now, this is referring to historical projects that they have performed for us, that points for this criteria may be awarded or deducted for reasons including but not limited to any adverse attestation or audit findings regarding proper accounting of costs, expenses, charges, sales tax credits, and any other invoice items on previous school board contracts for blank years. We haven't kind of figured out 5 years, 10 years. We kind of haven't settled that in our own minds as yet. So when this document is sent out to begin with, anybody who is responding, construction firm that is responding to this, will know that if you have a history of overcharging the district, then you will lose points on this. The third document that I'm referring to is the actual evaluation sheet. So on the evaluation sheet, right before, let's see, column, almost to the end before the total, where it says possible 50 points, you will see past performance, such as quality work, accurate invoicing, and scheduling. So this is staff's attempt to reinsert the teeth into the language that will, from the procurement side of it, that this will cause you to lose points on the evaluation. And then on the back end of it, you will have to pay for the attestation cost if you find more than 10,000.
Questions or comments? Ms. Jimenez.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Morrison. I happen to have been on the board when we chose to remove this, and I recall voting on it to be supportive of staff's argument of the impact that it might have on future contracts. However, having been on that side of the vote and seeing the consequences to the district of trying to work at contracts in that way and seeing that loss of integrity, if you will, in terms of what happens when the district is not paid the way it should be, I would definitely support making that change to the policy and being very clear, because, you know, we have to be fair. So we need for them to know that the game rules have changed. And so I support the documentation that's going to be sent to them and the changes that are made to the evaluation sheet. If anything, I hope to see this on the next board agenda if there's board consensus that we move forward.
Thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Simpson.
Mr. Morrison, this change in language would not change any contracts that we had in place prior to February of 2014. Is that correct? If we had contracts with a contractor to spend $50 million at Drillbridge High School, and it was signed before the board made the change, would that contract still be in place, and would that contractor be subject to paying the attestation fee?
As I recall, the history is whenever we had this language in the contract, we have followed up with an attestation that is part of our procedure. The contracts that were let, so to speak, with the language removed, we still did the attestation. However, the district paid for the cost. I'm not sure I'm answering your question correctly.
This language just came in. It was approved in February of 2014. Is that correct? I think it was February.
In February of 2014,
that's when the board voted to change the policy.
To remove the language.
That's correct.
Okay.
So any contracts that were done prior to the date that you
would have had
to
this
remove
language
that, the contractor, if they overcharged us, would be responsible for the attestation.
Cost, yes, sir.
Have you charged that on all these contracts that this sheet that you gave us shows that we've got $300,000 to $400,000 here in overcharges and at least $138,000 in attestation fees?
Yes.
Have you charged the contractor?
Yes, sir. And to be straight with it, When we brought forward the results of the attestation to the school board, I actually put in the narrative or the blurb that we have received a check from Proctor or whomever in the amount of X and the check number. That should be on the historical documents for when we bring forward the attestation results. So yes, we have received that $300,000 that is on that sheet that I gave you. However, yes, we have paid from the district's resources when this language was removed.
I'm still just a little bit confused. Did the contractors pay the attestation cost? Did you send them a bill for that?
Prior to February of 2014, we would have, yes, sir. Prior to the language being removed, yes.
And we've collected all of this?
$300,000, yes, sir.
$300,000?
Yes, sir.
And did we collect the one from Pirtle yet? Where he wants to pay us and we...
The one from Pirtle we have not collected yet, sir. The memorandum that was issued to Pirtle and copied to the school board says that we're currently going through the attestation process for Fellsmere, Phase 1. And obviously, I've talked to the superintendent about that, and we may just say, okay, stroke us a check. It's better in our bank account than yours. But, however, during a reconciliation process, things... credits and debits go back and forth, so we don't have a final amount. But if it's a pleasure of the board and superintendent, then yes, we will ask for those funds.
But it is over $100,000.
Yes, I believe it was $117,000 that they fessed up that there was an accounting error and that they wanted to make it right.
I happen to like folks like that, by the way, and we need to accommodate their wishes and
give them
money, and then if they still owe us more, we can always go back.
There's something to be said about knowing that the auditors are coming. Yes, sir.
When will that be completed?
I'll have a conversation with the superintendent. We can move forward with that expeditiously.
I would suggest that be done.
Yes, sir.
We can and we will.
Anyone else?
Is this new language in the... Or what language is in the construction project on the new administration building?
This language is not in there. The contract for the new administration building was a total rewrite of the construction management at risk contract. We had new staff come on board with different perspectives. We tore the contract essentially apart. We worked with the school board attorney. We brought forward the changes. And we now have a new contract, the construction manager at risk contract, but it does not have this language. We will reinsert it as proposed.
So the contract that we have on the new administration building, there's nothing in there about
this language is not
paying the attestation.
No, sir, that's not in there.
Am I hearing that this language presented by Mr. Morrison is acceptable? Is there any other changes to this? Or?
See, the language is okay, but it just continues to bother me that the fine staff that we have apparently doesn't understand the contract wording, and I'm sure we have the ability to add up what the bills and make sure that we're paying the correct amount, but that just bothers the daylights out of me that we're not capable of looking at the invoices that come in and making sure that we're not overpaying.
I've said this before. Construction accounting is incredibly complex. It is not buying a sofa from wherever. Come in, oh, we bought a sofa, pay it, go on. Labor burden, all of the overhead fixed. Variable overhead, things that go in are incredibly complex, and that's why you have this need for an attestation. I mean, it's there's an implication that somehow we have staff members that aren't smart enough to do this, and that's not the case. It's a very, very, very specified, very, very technical area of accounting. It really is, and that's just This was not a change in policy. This was a request by our staff, our procurement folks, that they were having problems getting people to bid on jobs at that point. The economy was a little different then. And they said, you know, when they talked to contractors, this being in there was an impediment to getting people to bid. We weren't going to have people bid on jobs, and so you didn't have a competitive bidding process. So they asked us to temporarily take that out. We were just trying to help out, okay? We temporarily take it out until we get to a time where it makes sense to put it back in. And if it's all right, if our staff, our procurement folks, if our facilities folks think it's now time to come back in, by all means, let's go. But, you know, to imply that we don't have people who are smart enough to read an invoice, that's really unfair.
Facts.
All right, so are we clear with the consensus of the wording on this? And are you clear with our consensus?
I believe I have the direction of the board.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Fox.
Item? Yes. It came up at our last organizational meeting, the Treasury Coast Council of Local Governments. It's been my committee responsibility for the past year, and having attended this meeting numerous times, there's very little of substance as far as from an education standpoint, and I'm not certain that it's a true value add. I understand Judy was able to give me a history, thank God for Judy, of why we ended up with that board appearance. Candidly, it seems like a board assignment for someone who's politically ambitious, because it is all of different cities, and you know, if I were thinking of running for something, I would want to be on that committee. But as far as real decision or actions taken, I think we've had a couple letters, opinion letters or position statements that we've administered, one around the pumping of sand from the Stewart Shoals or something and moving it south to Miami-Dade. You know, so it's easy for the board to see that perhaps that's not. But again, it's only $200, and if it's the board's pleasure, I'll continue take my Wednesday morning and go down there and attend it. Or if anyone else has an ambition in that direction, it might be.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Frost. A few years ago, I actually attended those meetings, and I am not seeking higher office. And one of the things that I found was that attending those meetings, yes, Mr. Searcy, in case you're surprised, I am not seeking higher office. But one of the things that I got out of going to those meetings was hearing what was going on in other counties and things that were important. And numerous times we had workforce people come and talk about businesses and partnership opportunities. And I did feel that it was educational. It sounds to me, and I haven't been attending, so it sounds to me like they have moved away from the diverse voices of all of the different areas of what governments do, and they're focusing on the lagoon, they're focusing on sand, they're focusing on the environment. And my only suggestion would be, before packing our bags and leaving, going to a meeting and saying to them, you know, you have a voice as an elected official and as a liaison to the board. You know, the school board is not finding value in what we're doing here. And before just walking away, you know, do you feel that education is important enough in all of these government situations, you know, that it is a relevant topic of our conversation? And if it is not, by all means, walk away. I think sometimes we have the ability to have a voice and say, wait a minute, if you're inviting us, if you want school board members to be present, that we should maybe be part of setting the agenda or something along those lines. So, you know, I'm not volunteering to go. I do feel that it is a little cynical to just always think about people's political ambitions, because I recall when I was there were other school board members there, and we had some conversation about the importance of education in terms of workforce issues and whatnot when we had those types of presenters. So your experience has been unfortunate. And of course, if it's a waste of your time, I'm not, you know, as one board member, I don't want you wasting your time. But I think it might be worth bringing that up before we walk away.
Thank you. Of the four counties represented, only two have school board members, Indian River and St. Lucie. Martin and Okeechobee have decided not to be part of it. So for whatever reason, they don't feel there's value add there.
But again, if it's the pleasure of the board, I'm happy to attend.
Have you paid $200 yet?
No, it comes out of district. And that's why I brought it up now, because they're on calendar year versus our fiscal year. So it'll be due January 1st.
Would I suggest that we continue to be members but monitor the agenda and not attend? I would hate to just cut loose. It's due in January. I think that we should, if you could monitor, I mean, that would be my suggestion. Many of us have planning. I know I have two planning and zoning, Spelsmere and Sebastian, and I attend most of them. There are a few that have maybe two meetings in 2 years on both that have concerned something that would be of a school district issue. But I still monitor. I mean, I go, and they're local, but they're local, and I enjoy them. And there's a lot of information about my community. So would it be maybe preferable to continue membership, but continue to monitor, and then wait at the end of maybe the next organizational meeting? You could bring next year. You could bring forward your thoughts through the year on the course that we took, and then we could, well before January, decide if we want to renew then.
Certainly.
Does that sound acceptable?
And would it be possible to maybe at some point, as our board liaison, bring up the concern of the value and do it in advance so that they're aware, not just wait until you do the report and we're out of there, but let them know? Because people cannot improve what they are doing if they are not given the opportunity and the feedback. That would be my only addition to that.
Mr. McKinnon?
Yes, we do have a voting number.
Was that helpful, Mr. Forbes?
Thank you. I have my direction.
Thank you. Mr. McKinnon?
I have a
vote. Mr. Searcy?
Number one, or did y'all already go past that?
No, we just was suspended in the
I spoke to all the modifications that were today in our recommendation. I tried to make a suggestion at the organization meeting, but it didn't exactly work. So if a school board member wants to have an item move from the consent agenda to the action agenda, we should be able to, without first having a motion to approve the orders of the day, I would suggest maybe the chairman might ask if anybody wants to have any items moved, and let's move them all at one time. Because if we get into a situation where I want an item moved, I make a motion to approve the order today with item number A moved, then Ms. Mendes wants something moved, and we got to amend the motion, and then Sean wants something. We got to amend that motion. It just makes sense to me to have the chairman just list all of them, and then we can have one motion for all the items on loop. So that's my suggestion, and
that sounds great. Actually, I did have a conversation with our attorney, and she said that each board had a how would you like to do that, and it's really we could set protocol. I think what Mr. Searcy has suggested is fine. I will, when we get to orders of the day, say, are there any requests? And I'll jot them down. Then someone else can, protocol, make the motion if they are so moved. And we can continue forward with our meeting in a nice, neater fashion. Sounds good. Ms. Menes, I'm going
to... Yeah, my items are down under the superintendent, so I'll just wait. I did want to know if we could, when it's time to do the superintendent's items, if we could move the DSEG order to item number one. I have a feeling that there are folks in the audience that are interested in that issue, and I'd like us to just, for the interest of time and respect to people who are taking time out of their day, to make that as expedient as possible.
Absolutely fine.
Thank you. Quickly, I just would like to say that moving forward with student hearings, I asked the history on how we selected attorneys. There was people, they do our student hearings for free, and they volunteer. And nothing anything in past work do I want to draw attention to, but moving forward, first of all, maybe it's time to see if we can expand our list or make sure that we have choices. I think we've pulled almost, you know, it just could have been the draw of the person in the hopper. But, you know, definitely see if we can have a reach out to any local attorneys that would like to join the list. And then also, our attorney, Susanna DiAgresta, said she would also offer training so that maybe there's more a uniform approach to the hearings and that everybody's on the same page when they approach the hearings from the attorney point of view. So if that was my thought, was to maybe perhaps see if we could bring forward, maybe Ms. DiAgresta would know how we would go about informing that. Is that something that you could suggest to Ms. Stang, or would Ms. Stang look locally? Do we still want to confirm that our list is active?
And originally, the superintendent's office and the student services department did a reach out to a lot of local attorneys to generate some interest in serving as hearing officers. And there was originally, there was actually eight lawyers that were originally interested. Some have fallen by the wayside, you know, whether it's personal or business, you know, considerations, they weren't able to put the time in. But I think it might be great to reach out to the ones that are still willing to serve on the original list to verify that they are still willing to be on a rotation list, and then perhaps reach out to others in the community to see if there's interest of additional attorneys to be added to the list to expand it as much as we can. And we can certainly do an update on some training or just remind folks that have been serving where the information is located, what they've already received, that sort of thing. But, you know, absolutely, it's certainly appropriate to refresh that list if you're interested.
And that was my thought. I thought that that would be healthy and that if the board would be interested, we could ask the proper people to do that. Mr. McCain?
No, just kind of on a side note, have we ever thanked those folks? Send them a Christmas card, anything?
I believe that you do actually send a thank you letter every year, periodically to thank them for their service. I believe Ms. Stang can let you know when you've sent that out.
They do work for Bert.
Yes, sir.
They do.
Yes, sir. And I think that's why it's important to have a rotation so that you're not, you know, relying upon one individual to do all of the work. If there's a rotation list, everybody can share in some of the time that they give.
Yes, ma'am. Ms. DiAgresta, how many of the eight are actually remaining?
I can tell you I still have six confidentiality letters, but I the student service department will have to let us know when they call through the rotation who is able to at that moment and who isn't. I don't have that statistical information.
I have the same name, so I understand where the curiosity is. And then my second question is relative to the training. You would do the training, and when you do the training, do you make them aware of the context of the realities of the school district, of the challenges that we face? For example, we recently had a reprimand from the Department of Education because we were disproportionately expelling African-American ESE students. And so are these volunteers made aware of the complexities of some of these situations and of their options? You know, you can make a recommendation, bring it forth to the superintendent to expel, but there are other options that are available to students. Are these folks made aware that there's homebound, that there's this, that there's that? Is that part of your training, or is it pure legalistic?
I'm going to say yes and no. I would not be sharing any specific details about the community. That's really up to the two parties to the student disciplinary hearing to determine what community information is relevant to that issue. But I would be sharing with hearing officers that it's not black and white. It's not they go back to school or they get expelled. There are lots of options in between that that the hearing officer can talk through with the people in the room, but I would not be sharing anything about demographics or age or, you know, sex or anything like that. That's really up to the infraction that's in front of the hearing officer and if that information is relevant to that infraction. So that would come from the two parties, but I would share options for consequences, I guess is the way to summarize it. Anyone else?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
So Dr. Torres-Martinez and I did review the list and who is active and who's not necessarily active and that kind of thing. And we're prepared, if it's the direction of the board, to go ahead and issue another call to refresh the list and maybe offer training to any new members or refresher training through Ms. DiAgresta to the current members that are on the list. So we were prepared to do that.
So how many are active?
Well, there were three that respond on a regular basis to our calls. So you could say the list is as low as three.
And that's a waste of time, another five calls for our staff as well. So I think this is a very healthy process. Anybody else? Thank you. Mr. Frost, do you have anything?
Nothing.
Mr. McCain? Mr. Searcy?
I have a couple more things.
Sure.
I've asked a couple different times. We had that issue, and I'm not sure the board is aware of it. We had an issue where we had a huge amount of books stored up at Norwich High School in the box, as well, close to $100,000 of books. And I've asked a couple different times to see the numbers on that, and I've not been able to do it. I think there was like about $90,000 actually worth of books that we got credit for. But I was curious to see what we actually paid for the books. I've not been able to get that information. But we got about $90,000 worth of credit. The books sat over there for at least a year without even the boxes being opened. And my question on that is, how could that happen? Why? And this was before this superintendent, by the way. Why was it allowed to happen, and why can't we see the numbers on what they paid for the books and what we actually got credit for? And if the, you know, I think the English books, if I'm not mistaken, if the English teachers didn't like the books and didn't buy in on them, why in the world did we buy?
Is that a request you'd like to make with superintendent?
I can share some information if it's a pleasure
sure.
of the board regarding
yes.
the situation. So typically with a textbook adoption, English, for example, you'll get ancillary materials or additional teaching materials besides the textbook. And so with language arts, English, that usually is in the form of novels, additional novels, supplementary reading and that kind of thing. So it's my understanding that the year in question was a textbook adoption year where we were adopting new language arts textbooks. And the teachers on the adoption committee had selected a set of novels for each school and that kind of thing, and so those were all ordered. Over the summer, an additional order of novels went forward by some of the staff here at the district office. They did not consult with the classroom teachers about what they ordered. They ordered what they thought would be best. So when those materials arrived in the summer, they were checked in and cataloged, so to speak. Not the boxes weren't opened, but they were checked in Vero Beach High School's media center, as well as other secondary schools. It wasn't just at Vero Beach High School. These additional materials were ordered for other secondary schools as well. So once the teachers got back and they realized that they had the materials they ordered, plus these other materials that they did not order, different staff at the different schools, assistant principals at some, media specialists at some, language arts teachers at others, started saying, well, what can we do with this surplus material, these books that we did not order? The books were ordered from the Florida Textbook Depository and a language arts supply source. So not just the Florida School Book Depository, but also a publisher of novels as well. So it took us some time to negotiate how we could return those materials and receive credit. Once we figured out how we were going to do that and which ones were going to go back, the materials that we weren't going to use were sent back to the Florida School Book Depository and the publisher. My understanding that we received every dollar in equal credit, what we paid for, what we returned, that the only amount of money that we are out is the shipping costs to send the books back and to ship the new ones to us. So that's the, my understanding, that's the only money that we are at a loss for, so to speak. How it happened, as Mr. Searcy said, is basically someone at the district office made a decision to order materials without consulting with the classroom teachers who had already ordered materials. And we'll do everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen again. I do have the figures. Mr. Morrison has the figures for the shipping costs. I was under the impression that I was looking for how much money were we out. In other words, what did we lose on the deal, so to speak?
We pay for the books.
I can research that as well. I'll research that, but as far as the shipping costs, Mr. Morrison has those, and he'll present those to us at any time if you want.
It's just a number.
And I guess my follow-up question would be, you know, what kind of accountability do you have for staff making decisions like that without teacher input? Because, you know, we're supposed to be working together,
right,
not in isolation. And so there needs to be accountability around those types of decisions.
Well, typically with a textbook adoption, you're not going to have supplementary materials ordered over the summer, and that's what happened in that case, so we don't do that anymore. I don't know that we'd ever done that prior. It's not a normal operating procedure. The assistant superintendents oversee each of their budgets, make sure that action under their umbrella, you know, happens the way it's supposed to happen. And obviously the purchasing department under Mr. Morrison makes sure that we're not buying things that haven't been approved and that kind of thing. So that was something that we don't normally do. So I said we're not going to do it again. Mr. Morrison, do you have the figure with you?
Dr. Endell mentioned today's task, as we understood it, was to find out how much money we spent to ship the books back to the Florida School Book Depository, which is $4,682.30, and then also to bring back the correct materials to the district. We paid $788.70. I received this information from the curriculum department this morning.
Yes, sir.
Just to get the timeline right, so we purchased, against our normal operating procedure, books over the summer. Would that be before the end of the budget year, and then we sell them back in the new budget year?
That's what happened.
Yes. Santa Clara. Yeah. But, okay, thank you.
This is the shipping cost, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's not the other item.
No, sir, but we'll get that, too.
That to us.
Yep.
But your understanding is it's dollar for dollar.
That was my understanding. We'll research it and make sure. And if we can find the invoices, we'll make sure we provide those.
So the delta between the two, or our loss or whatever, would be limited to $5,000.
That's my understanding at the present time, but we'll check a little further.
Thank you.
If the board allows, in the interest of time, we can go to number three, Mr. Searcy.
Okay, good. What do you mean if they allow?
Well, I'm skipping the, you know, I mean, skipping it because after Mr. Frost comes to Mr. McCain, who has nothing on there. Well, actually, it's Ms. Jimenez. But go ahead. That's okay. I was trying to say.
My question is, you know, we've got a huge liability outstanding for vacation days and sick days and carryover. I think sick days, our policy allows 500 hours of sick days carryover, which amounts to over 2 months worth of days. And I would like to see us see if we can change that policy. And I know I looked at the union contract last night, and it's in there, and our school board rules say that. But we need to do something about that policy that we have, in my opinion. When people are employed employed by the district, they begin work at, I'll say $20,000, but you know, with the new salary schedule, it's, you know, $50,000 or $60,000 or $80,000. But by the time they leave the district, they will get paid for the vacation days and the sick days, whatever the percentage happens to be, at their highest level of pay. And there's something wrong with that picture. There's something wrong with that picture. And I would like to see us find a way to change that 500-hour policy down to some reasonable policy, and even in the sick leave, go to a use-or-lose-it policy.
Any comments?
I'm glad it was well received.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
I have, you know, I honestly, I have no problem seconding anything for a conversation. Because I think when you are open to having a conversation, you realize that either you support what's going on and you have your reasons for it, or you may be challenged to think, wow, maybe we need to change this. So I would be more than happy to entertain this, because I do think we need to look at what we do, but I also feel that we need to be mindful when we talk about contracts, when we talk about our remuneration to our employees. We have to remember that we live in a community where 40% of our community is the working poor. We are the number one employer in Indian River County with over 2,000 employees. And we have a responsibility to our community. So I have no problem looking at it, but I do believe that we have to be mindful that if we want quality employee, if we want folks to stay on the job, we have to treat them with respect. And in our society, respect, unfortunately or fortunately, is represented by the money we give people. So I don't have a problem with it. I want to see, you know, you may have a very strong point and we're going to need to change it, but I think we need to look at the big picture, because what I'm finding is that often when we talk about budget, all we think about are numbers. We forget that there are human beings that are impacted by the decisions that we make. And a budget and the money that comes with the budget is meant to be focused on student achievement. If we don't pay people well, if we don't retain employees, and it's a revolving door, our children are not going to benefit. So by all means, let's do a workshop, let's talk about this, and let's see what we can do. And let's see if, you know, if we need to make a change in the policy. I think that we should all be of the mindset that we're willing to listen to each other, and whether we agree or disagree is irrelevant. Let's have a conversation. So, Mr. Searcy, thank you for bringing that up, and I look forward to another conversation.
It's probably an issue that's not for this venue. It's probably a whole workshop on this. A lot of this, I remember this became a hot button issue across the state a few years ago, and we got all this. I was shocked at how much the statute read. You know, you have to kind of look at that, because a lot of it is, and then it depends. Statute says, well, if they earn vacation days before this date, they get it by this, and then if that's after this date, it's something else, and then this guy talked to their dog about it, and it's a lot bigger issue than just, you know, we don't like it. You know, we're going to have to. But we need some information, and it's going to be a more detailed session than this.
Yes, and thank you. I agree with Mr. Searcy's sentiment. This is something that around the state and the nation is an issue where you see municipalities and other agencies that aren't adequately funding, and they have these these surprises, and they have to borrow at high interest rates to deal with things like that. Organizations that aren't as well run, who don't have the bond rating we have. We have discussed this a little bit. I'm certainly open to discussing it. I don't think we could revisit the fiscal solidarity or the fiscal foundation. We can't revisit that too often, I think. So as far as keeping, you know, the surprises down to a limit, I fully support that. And, you know, I hope we will have an opportunity. I know we have things in place like the lead buyback and things like that. programs in place, but I'd love to revisit those and make sure that we're doing the best things we can.
And it's probably important that this board, you know, with a new board, to go through that. And probably, and I'm telling you, it's probably a full standalone workshop session.
And we've done it before. A few years ago, when we did the buyback, that was a result of that workshop. And I think Mr. McCain brings up a good point, that when we started trying to dig down, we realized how much was statutory and how much limitation we had. So, you know, but it is worth revisiting. So, yes, let's do it.
I'd like to just wait in a little bit, and I would like a workshop. I'd like to just so that everything comes out, and I think that there's valid points across the board. But a little history that I know of is, you know, it's a little different when you start talking about the school district and children. It's all about education and the students. But remember, this is a government job, whether they're teachers or they're workers. And years ago, government jobs, the counterpart in the public sector, the counterpart for a you know, a construction person or clerical finance officer may be, you know, 20% to 30% higher in the public sector. But the benefits of the government job was that it came with benefits, that you were paid less, but you had benefits and a pension. And as the, you know, our wallets are shrinking and the taxpayers and things go on, they say they want to look at it, and with good reason. And for the exact reason that you said, Mr. Searcy, is that if you begin accruing at your early career and as you exit, that, you know, you could be caught with your pants down with five, you know, pockets to fill that year as they either resign, move out of state, even with the best of planning. The other thing, too, is, so that's totally clear, we'll say Mr. Jones, faithful employee since 1980, works all his life. Family medical leave is 3 months, and I believe by law, you know, FMLA, you can even extend for another 30, so there's 4 months. We've seen even our own family of employees come down with life-threatening cancer or things like that. That's what a lot of good workers do, and they save their time for that rainy day and hope to never see that emergency. So a lot of agencies will do that grandfather clause, and that becomes tricky at where Mr. McCain said honor before or after. But I wouldn't want to rob any employee of a benefit that for years they counted on, and then the day we change it, the next month they need it for a life threat. You know, it has to be a thoughtful process, and I'm willing to undertake that, and I agree with the rest of the board that we should look at it. I think it's healthy to look at it periodically, as Mr. McCain said, with every new board, because people have questions they want to understand, and there's, you know, you could streamline, and there may be some answers, so I'd be willing to look at it as well.
One point is there's no benefit being taken away from anybody. If you accrue a day and a half annual leave or sick leave or a day or whatever it is a year, you're getting paid for it. You just can't carry it over. If you use it or lose it, that's one piece, and I don't seem to be getting buy-in on that. But at the end of the year, if we have June or whenever it is, if we have folks who have not used their annual leave, we can pay them for it, but we're paying at their current rate of pay,
sure,
as opposed to a higher rate of pay. So, and there are just a couple of issues on that I think need to be aired out.
And there may be some thoughts, like I agree with you, the carryover, but the use it or lose it to the valued employee. So I think these are things that have to be talked about.
I think there's some buyer right now.
I just want to make sure we're all in consensus that we're well willing to put the time in at a different time.
We can spend hours discussing this.
The issue, though, at hand is we have to stick the shovel in sometime now.
I'm saying, well, let's have a workshop.
Sure,
right. I'm not saying let's not stick a shovel. Let's stick a shovel. I'll stick that shovel out today. Not today.
As long as it's time certain before budget, right?
Yeah.
It's just a big time to do a session like this. Let's have a workshop.
We already had several items kind of in mind for a January workshop, so we'll see if we can squeeze it in the January workshop. If not, it'll be first thing in February.
Okay.
I just did want to draw your attention to, you have a blue packet in front of you, a blue folder rather. The second item in that packet is a copy of the PowerPoint slides from a presentation from a workshop earlier this year where Dr. Fritz and Dr. Sue did share information about our various leave policies and where they're embedded in statute, where they're embedded in contract language, and the costs for the payouts of the various programs and that kind of thing. So that's the kind of information we'll share again at a workshop in January, February. So if you want to take a look at that between now and then, you know, that's some of the same stuff you'll see there. But we'll definitely have something ready for January, February, and we'll let you know as soon as we schedule it.
Thank you. We've covered all agenda items. Any additional items before we move to board committee reports? Mr. McCain, do you have any committee reports?
No.
Ms. Menz? Mr. Searcy?
No.
Dr. Rendell, we're moving item C to the first item.
Sure. So just to give the board members and anybody that's going to listen to the tape or people that are in the audience an update, the desegregation review, so to speak, or the pursuit of unitary status. Several months ago, we talked about the fact that we wanted to investigate achieving unitary status. And so I worked with Mr. Gressa to talk about a plan of action of how we would go about doing that. We talked with other districts that have pursued that in the past. And one of the things we found is you need to find out kind of where you are in terms of complying with the various tenets of the desegregation order, where you are, if you've achieved all the different goals and measurements that the desegregation order has set forth, will determine whether or not you should legitimately pursue unitary status because you're going before the federal court to have the court order lifted. So we did some research and we talked to some districts that are pursuing that, and we found a firm that specializes in the study of how a district or another organization would be doing with this type of work and would recommend or not recommend whether or not you pursue unitary status. So we engaged that firm about a month ago and have given them some initial information, some initial data. Basically, the review that was done by Mr. Gress's law firm recently and other data. They've studied or are studying that data and are going to ask us for more data next, and they'll review that data. That'll be an exhaustive review. They're going to give us a list of everything they want to see and for the amount of years back they want to see it to see, you know, how we're doing with the different tenants, again, in the DSEG order and that kind of thing, and what if we're doing well, they can say that we're doing well, and what if we're not doing well that we need to improve upon. And they'll give us kind of a report, and that would really do a lot for us to see how we're doing, but also as to whether or not what our status is as far as pursuing unitary status. And this law firm this is what they do. They're very specialized in this. And I don't know if Mr. Gressa wants to chime in on anything else.
The other piece of information, I think it was important, and you actually brought it up with the consultant, is a budget. It's difficult to put a number on staff time, staff hours to gather historical data, but there will be some information in this report about that. But also, in the event the school board wanted to move forward with a request for unitary status, a ballpark budget of what it would take to do that. Because I think it's important not only to know from a data perspective kind of where we are, but then also from a looking forward perspective, if we want to move forward in a particular direction, what are we looking at as far from a budgetary perspective so that you can kind of have a bigger picture of it and make an informed decision of what you'd like to do next. So that's the work that this consultant will be pulling together.
Ms. Mattis.
Can we have the name of the firm?
Yes.
And what is the budget for the initial model? Because I know you distinguish it between now and then if we do pursue unitary status, there's going to be another budget. But what have we agreed to right now for that scope of work?
We haven't agreed to a set budget amount. We've agreed to a set of
scope of services.
Scope of services and a per hour cost of those scope of services. And right now, it's not a great deal of money. To be honest, so.
Could you just shoot us a number?
I don't have a number. Don't have a ballpark number.
They're working without knowing what they're going to get. They're a law firm. They're
not shot. They don't do anything.
Or how much an hour are they being paid?
Okay, well, we can provide that to you. I don't know if we have that with us.
I do not have the law firm name, but the lawyer that we spoke with on the phone is John Borkowski is his name. I can't give you his firm name. I thought I had his letter.
Respectfully, I'm actually shocked that we have an item here that is to talk about the desegregation review, and you think the basic thing is to come to the board with the name of the firm, whatever your budgetary agreement. You must have had some kind of conversation, and because in my experience, law firms never do anything for free unless it's this pro bono stuff, and I don't think they do unitary status pro bono because there's a lot of money to be had. Do you at least have a timeline? When will they come back to you with their basic report?
So we anticipate receiving some information from them in the next week before we get home for a Christmas vacation or winter break. And then after giving them the information that they're going to ask for, we expect to get a report sometime in late January, early February.
Thank you, Mr. Sears. I appreciate your patronizing. This is more of a clarification that I want. My understanding of why we're doing this, you know, because when I saw that we contracted a law firm, it made it seem like we're already going to go to the courts. And my understanding as one board member is that what this board wants to understand is, since 1964, what has this school district been doing to comply with the DSEG order and to meet whatever goals needed to be met as a result of that DSEG order? And I know that as we've had this conversation, one little piece of it that has come up is that it would be a great way to cut our transportation costs if we didn't have to bus children all around the county. Now, of course, if I were a parent of children that are being bused outside of their community because my school district is under DSEG order, I don't know how happy I would be about my child having to be bused to schools that are far away from my home. But that's just one piece of it. And my understanding is that we want to know if we are serving those students well, first and foremost. And if we are, then I think we may be in a position to apply, you know, to do what it takes to achieve unitary status. But I think we're almost jumping the gun because we don't even know where we stand. And from what we hear from the community, it doesn't look good. And we don't have a lot of credibility. So, Dr. Rendell, is that your understanding, that we want to know where we are and then maybe we can go for unitary status?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that's what I mentioned earlier, was that when we talked with other districts that have done this, mm-hmm. they said the first thing you need to do is have a neutral party, an outside organization, come in and do an assessment. And this was the firm or organization that was recommended the most and received the strongest recommendations. Rationale for not trumpeting out their name and that kind of thing is to afford them the ability to remain neutral. You know, but we'll, the board wants us to go ahead and...
Can you explain that? What do you mean? Do you think we're going to go lock them or something? I'm trying to understand the comment.
Well, it seemed like that would be, you know, the organization would be able to do all their analysis without any contact or interference or anything like that, and that's why we hadn't revealed their name, so to speak, or anything like that. But we can do that and give you the terms and all that kind of thing too. It's the direction of the board. Okay, well, we can do that.
Mr. Wilson.
Thank you. I really appreciated hearing Dr. Rendell say that the purpose of this, it appears on our agenda as desegregation review update, but I really appreciate the way he spoke about it first is the achievement of unitary status. And there hasn't been anything that I've heard from any member of this board in any meeting that hasn't been, we want to achieve meaningful unitary status. And I believe that this is a step in the right direction. I understand his reluctance to release a name and things like that. We do have procedures in place that cap him at less than $50,000, and he's able to. The superintendent is able to expend those monies on consultants and attorneys in pursuit of the truth. And that really should be, and that's my understanding of the way it is today, is that this is a search for truth. And once we have the truth, we may have to take a cold shower. It may not be a great truth, but it moves us closer to meaningful unitary status. And I think that that's really, and anyone step up and let me know if I'm wrong, but I think that that's really the purpose of this board and this investigation, is to move us to a meaningful unitary status where we're serving all students with excellence.
No one has said to the contrary, Mr. Forrest.
I understand. But that, I feel as though we're heading in the right direction. You know, we know that the wheels of justice are slow sometimes, but we have to take these first steps. And if, you know, by the time I'm off the board, I'm hoping we're at least a lot closer to unitary status than we were when I came on. And that, I think, you know, we need to keep bringing it up, and I prefer to see it on our agenda, because words matter, you know. Achieving unitary status versus, you know, I'm as guilty as anyone have saying get out from under the desegregation order. That's a terrible way to look at it. We need to make sure that we're doing the right thing by all of our residents and all of our students, and achieving unitary status in a meaningful way is the right thing and the right approach. And I think that you know, that taking a probing so that we understand what the financial realities are. Now that's probably going to be our biggest cold shower, if you will, is going to be the cost, because, you know, we've heard different numbers bandied about in different conversations where other districts have done it are well in excess of $1 million. Those are things we'll have to budget for if that's something that this board corporate decides is the right path to go. But I think these early probing investigations into our current state of affairs is, you know, doing the reconnaissance makes sense at this point. And then we'll decide later on what the best course of action is. And my understanding in a individual conversation with our superintendent is that this is someone with a track record of success who has a great deal of experience and knows the ins and outs of the process and ways that we can do this in a meaningful way and achieve unitary status. I think that's, you know, I applaud the superintendent's efforts in this direction and of course keep our bill low as low as possible.
Well, just another comment, the firm has a great deal of experience in this area. A track record of success, I don't know if I'd characterize it that exactly, because one of the things that, and Mr. Gressy can correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that the individual we talked to stressed over and over again is that the report that they provide may not indicate that we would be ready to pursue unitary status. And he, you know, said that he has delivered that report in the past as well. You know, that, hey, you've done these things well, you've met all the tenets of your order, and you should move forward. Other times he said, you haven't done this, you haven't done that, you really need to do these things before you do. So I think his firm is going to give us the most accurate report.
Which will give us a clear view of what steps we must take in
exactly.
Prepare before we reassess.
We'd like to see some numbers, so we'll share some numbers. Yes, sir.
I just want to weigh in. Some of the difficulty is words and terminology, and I'm glad I thought you put it very well today. And when I talk to the community, everybody has a right. The school has a court order, and everyone has a right to become whole and make a court order right, whether it's to pay your traffic ticket or to do community service, or in this case, we have a desegregation order, and what we'd like to do is obtain unity. We may not be ready, but if we look at it, and this, we have a new driver in the driver's seat, and he certainly doesn't have
have the crystal ball to tell what we've done for the last few years. We may not even have the records. Were they saved? It was probably on microfilm, you know, who knows? And so finding out where we're at and moving forward is what we need to do. Because if we are falling short of that bar that was set by the court order, we will see it, we can address it. We may not be ready, as you said. What I find, personally, me, in the committee when I go about, that it's not viewed like that as the community, that the, some of the community feels it's a safe, it protects them, the court order. And if the court order is removed, there will be no, the fairness of a district may be removed. That's what I'm hearing, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. Don't know how to convey that to the community. I don't know how to tell them that it's in their, in the best interest of the community to pursue unity. And when we're, as you, I think you said, cold bucket of water or
cold shower.
Cold shower. You know, we'll own it. We'll own it. And move forward and try to work with the community. But the community will have to work with us. And if they work with us, I think that we'll achieve it faster. And I hope we work with the community, but working with the community or not, we owe it to the students to fight for unity. And I'm very much in favor of that. Yes, ma'am.
And I agree with you. I mean, I do think that we need to do our homework. I think that, to me, the issue has been that there has been a lack of communication, because I think that when, you know, in the news there was a report of our district response, and in all honesty, when I read the district response, I read it and I thought, what am I arguing about? It seemed like everything was being done, you know, and I think that that miscommunication is what people, you know, people read that and they feel, well, I'm not being taken seriously, because what I'm hearing, and again, it's the news, and I don't know how the news represented it. Was it misrepresented? I don't know. But all I know is that people read that. Truth or not, that's what people are reading. And that's why communication is crucial, because we all want the same thing. But over the years, we have done a good job of alienating the community because we really haven't been paying attention to this. And so as you can imagine, when people hear that the board wants to get out from under the DSEG, they're like, wait a minute, what do you mean you just want to get out from under it? What about the kids? You haven't, you know, and I think, like you said, Mr. Frost, the language we use and the way we talk to people, the relationship that we have with people is crucial. And so my expectation is that as we move forward with this, that whoever needs to be in the know and whoever needs to be part of the communication, we need to do that. Because I think the way this has been presented and the language that has been used over time has been part of the alienation, unintentional. Because I think all of us want the same thing, meaningful movement. Towards our goal is that someday we will be doing what needs to be done so that we can have unitary status. But we have to be mindful of the importance of transparency and communication as we move forward. Otherwise, we're going to be creating tension. And we don't need tension in our community because we all care about our students.
So, respectfully, Ms. Jimenez, I think I'm very professional when I speak to the community. Some community members have shut me off just by who I am and where I sit.
Mm-hmm. That's unfortunate.
And I've, you know, sometimes, and I want to make sure that it's clear, because I can't speak for the board, but I can speak for this board member. Mm-hmm. I have spoken to try to make connections, and that is difficult when you've been shut off. So it's a two-way street, and it's not all the board's issues. Maybe at times we are not good at choosing words, and that's on both sides. So I just will say that moving forward, hopefully we can convey that better. I thought it was Mr. Frost, thank you. I thought that hopefully that will be quoted as it's perfect as you said it, and I think it's a positive thing for the board and the community, and I just hope that you know, they can buy into the community can buy into it as well, and because I know we have already bought into it. We want this good move forward to help out, and I just really would like to see the community. Feel free to call me. You know, I've made the calls as well. So, anything else, or shall we move on to item A?
It looks like we'll move on to item A. So, item A says multi-year contract discussion. I wanted to share with you a couple, some background information on a couple of the items on the action agenda for tonight. So, if you've had a chance to look at your action agenda, action item agenda C is a contract with an organization called the District Management Council to come in and do a review of the ESE department, of our ESE department from top to bottom, services that are delivered or not delivered to students who have disabilities. The contract with the company, the District Management Council, is a three-year contract. It's a multi-year contract. The price per year is under the $50,000 threshold. We could have entered into a series of one-year agreements with the DMC, the District Management Council, and not required board approval. However, in the sense of transparency and to be honest and open and broker with you all what we're doing, it's a three-year partnership that we're entering into with the DMC, the District Management Council. District Management Council is a very well-respected organization out of the Northeast. I think they're based in Boston. These are some former superintendents, former educators, some graduates from the Harvard Business School and that kind of thing that really have worked with districts all over the country, evaluating departments, finding ways for them to deliver the services more efficiently and that kind of thing. ESE, or special education, is one of their specialties. Again, when I talked to other superintendents, I said, you know, I want to have some of my departments evaluated. One of them is exceptional student education. Do you know of an organization that does that, that can come in and tell me what we're doing well, what we're not doing well, and then give me a game plan as to how we can go forward? District Management Council was the top choice. Everybody recommended them. So I contacted them, reached out, discussed with them over the last several months about what services they provide, how much it would cost, what arrangements they've had in the past with other districts. They can come in and do the evaluation and give us a report and then walk away. Or they can come in and give us the do an evaluation, give us a report, and then plan with us how we can deliver the services better and work with us over the next couple of years to do that. So that's what I'm pursuing, is a three-year contract with the District Management Council. There's backup documentation about the proposal and that kind of thing. It's a really, really well-respected organization that I think is going to help us do our job better with ESE. So questions or concerns?
Yes, first of all, thank you. This has been a long time coming. We have been struggling with ESE since I've been on the board, and that's 7 years. So I am very excited that you're taking, you know, you're showing leadership and initiative and moving forward with this. I do have a question, and I don't know if this caught anybody else's attention. I did mention this to Dr. Rendell. I've read through the document. I'm very pleased with the detail in terms of the investigation and so on and so forth about determining the state of things. The only thing that kind of makes me feel uncomfortable is that this comes with technology, a technology component. And my concern is, you know, the way I saw us doing this was just compile the information, give us a report, what are we doing that's working, what are some best practices. But this is heavy on the technology solutions. On page 4 of 25, you know, they have created a suite of web-based technology solutions that provide the data collection, data analysis. You know, we have invested already so much money in technology. I just want to know what the difference is between whatever web-based material they're bringing. And then on page 15 of 25, it says that they will also set up the technology solution. So maybe I'm misinterpreting this. If you could clarify for me what that means, because they're talking about this technology. Can you just clarify that so that I can feel comfortable that this is more of a research?
I'll do my best. it's my understanding that what we're contracting with them for is services. It's them to sit down with us and look at our scheduling matrices to see, you know, if we've got this many students in certain levels of needs or inclusion classes or self-contained, how we're scheduling those, how we're using our resources, and that kind of thing. I don't believe there's any software package that we would have to buy additionally or anything like that. It's more like helping us utilize the resources we have better. They've never mentioned any kind of additional package we would need to buy or anything like that.
It just reads very...
I didn't pick up on that until you mentioned it today. It keeps talking about a technology solution, and we have enough technology.
Okay.
We're good.
All right, just want to make sure. Thank you.
Still under item, unless there are any other questions about the DMC contract, still under item A for me is action agenda item D. That's also another multi-year contract. It's with a company called Naviance. It's actually a division of the Hobson's Corporation. In your blue folder, there are two pages of some information that I put together to show you some of the highlights of what Naviance can do for us. Naviance is a career and college planning tool and so much more. It's, I don't know if you're aware, but our 7th and 8th graders now log into a program called My Career Choices. It's provided by the state. It helps them with kind of, does a career inventory. Hey, they do the survey, and it tells them they could be a forest ranger or a dentist or whatever. It doesn't really do anything other than that. Naviance has a component like that. It starts in the 7th grade and career interest inventory and that kind of thing, but then takes the student all the way through 12th grade, through college application process, through financial aid application process, and that kind of thing. It's a wonderful software tool. We looked at it a year and a half ago or so, or at least a year ago in St. Lucie. St. Lucie adopted it last spring. They use it now. All of their students in grades 7 through 12 use it. A lot of the private schools in the area use this service. The contract that you have before you is for a 5-year contract. One of the reasons I'm pursuing a 5-year contract is a commitment to our students that this service would be available for 5 years. What's happened in the past is, at least in the 7th and 8th grade, the state has given us a career planning tool, and then 2 or 3 years later changed the career planning tool to a different software package. What I'm trying to do here with this is say, you know, we're going to invest in this program. This program is going to be available to our students for the next 5 years. So next year's 8th graders, when they log in, they take their career inventory, they map out their plan for what they want to be when they grow up. For the next 5 years, they're going to be able to access this program as they go through and complete the different training modules. There's modules for parents to help their students get, you know, prepared for college or whatever they want to do after high school. When they get into high school, it tracks all of their progress towards whatever their academic goal is and that kind of thing. One of the big, I actually asked the Naviance Corporation to come and give a presentation to our high school and middle school guidance counselors and administrators. And when they left, the guidance counselors were 100% in agreement that they wanted this program, they wanted it today. In your packet, there's an email from Jessica Wood, the 7th page, talking about how great this program is, she wishes she could have it right now, how it's going to make their jobs easier. One of the things is there's a common college application tool. They fill out this common app, then when they want to apply to any college, almost any college in the country, the ones that use electronic applications, they can use the common app. They don't have to fill out another application over and over and over. It centralizes all their letters of reference and all that kind of thing. On the first page is a bunch of data to show you results. If you can see, each of those school districts that are listed there have seen great increases in the number of students receiving scholarship dollars once they started using the Naviance program. Houston ISD, Houston Independent School District, so this is an urban district, Houston, the city of Houston, they credit Naviance for the reason that their scholarship numbers have jumped so high. One of the things that jumped out at me when I talked to the people from Naviance last year when I was looking at this is the fourth bullet on at the very top of the page. 40% of U.S. seniors have a Naviance account. So this is something that seniors in 40% of the seniors across the nation have. Our students don't have access to this program. So this is something that, you know, we probably need to be doing, we haven't been doing, and you know, this package is for 5 years. Again, probably could have tried to enter into a series of one-year agreements with Naviance, and you can see the cost is less than $50,000 per year. Could have done that probably and not sought board approval, but instead trying to bring it to you and say, hey, this is something we're investing in that we think is going to pay big dividends for our students. Brought it to you in this fashion as a five-year contract, you know, just under $50,000 a year. Do you have questions about Naviance?
Anyone have questions?
Ms.
Fox?
Not about Naviance. Can we enter into it seems like most of our contracts are 3 years. Can we enter into a five-year agreement?
Mr. Gresser reviewed the contract.
Limitations on that?
No, sir. It's not a statute of limitations issue. Essentially, it is a one-year contract over 5 years. But the hook, if you will, is the dollar value of the contract is for the entire five-year period. So let's say the school board today says yes, and we get into this agreement. And in 2.5 years, you say no and stop it. You still pay for the entire five-year package. It's a five-year dollar amount, and they're providing services each year, but it's a five-year dollar amount. That's kind of the hook of staying in for 5 years. And as the superintendent said, it could be a one-year agreement. The price is going to be larger for a 1 year as opposed to 5 1-years with a hook that you're in for 5 years. That's how you structure it.
Well, and I agree with the logic behind if we're going to do this with seventh graders, we should at least let them finish.
Right.
Right? I mean, that makes sense.
$250,000, right?
Just under.
I have a comment. I would support this, and I think that's great. It's a great tool for the students. But I really hope it comes with student and parent direction and awareness. We have so many parents that don't use, that didn't use eSummer, that didn't use Focus, that don't even know how to find it.
Right.
Focus is such a wonderful tool, and that's my worry. That's my only worry. That's not the actual company. You can pick any company.
Sure.
It's that if we're going to give a tool that looks fantastic, and I think we should, if you're that sold on it, and you want to give a tool and you don't want to take it away from the student as well, I just want to make sure it comes up with heavy instruction on how to use it so that, which I know I don't have to say that, but I just find that I wish I might try to explain Focus to the parents and how to, you know, I can't believe parents aren't on it.
Right.
Before my kid's off the bus, I could see if something, oh, he's got a hard life.
Yeah. While we're talking about this, I have one very persistent constituent who shares my last name. She would like to see the Focus link and the useful link. She has to like Google it, or it's not very intuitive. So,
Mr. Green, did you take note of that?
Right now, it's under parent. If you just click under parent, we've added it right there, but we can click it.
Like the useful links, maybe the first one.
Okay.
Just button. Right, that would be awesome. Like a big Focus button, formerly eSembler.
Yeah.
So we have co-branding,
especially when you transition.
Right.
Just this big butts of mash here.
This all sounds really good, Dr. Mandel, but it seems to me like we keep talking at this board table about all those students we're missing. And we're going, this is for all these students that want to go to college. And there's so many of our students that do not go to college. Are we sliding them by spending $250,000 on this thing and not paying attention to their needs?
Okay, so
that's
we do have a little bit of time. So, Mr. Green, if you could get the presentation. There is actually a video clip from a district in California that, and I guess this is what they do. I don't know, but after they invest in money in something, they ask for a report to the board. And most of our reports are usually paper. So what this district has done is actually done a video report, so to speak, on their experience with Naviance. And one of the things I think you'll see in this video clip is there are students who maybe didn't think they were going to go to college, but based on their engagement with this product, maybe have changed their mind. The question about parent engagement or whatever is actually answered in a section of this. I think the whole video is 14 minutes. I don't think we'll watch the whole thing, but about 10 minutes of it, since we do seem to have time, would probably be good to give you some more context about what we think this program can do for our kids. The when you see a jump in scholarship level, like you saw on that first page, that means more of your kids are going to go to college because they have scholarship money. When you see a jump in the numbers of kids filling out college applications and attending college, that means more kids are going to college than you would have without the product. One of the things I didn't talk about, and I don't think it's mentioned in here, but it is in the backup material that you have for this item, the Naviance Corporation, the company, will track our graduates when they're in college and then give us information about how many of our kids are succeeding first, second, third, and fourth year in college. We don't have a way to track that right now. So, if, Mr. Green, if you could show that.
Provide students with college planning and career assessment tools. This year, our ABC School District has provided an account to all 7th through 12th grade students. Being that this is an implementation year, the Department of Academic Services is supporting our schools. One of our goals is for all 7th and 8th grade students to complete the Strengths Explorer quiz. So far, almost 3,000 ABC students have completed the assessment. This strength-based learning assessment helps students identify and capitalize on their strengths. We will hear from a few students who have completed this assessment.
What I got was actually pretty shocking because one of them, like, it said relating, and I didn't know that I could actually relate to people that much, and then it said that I could become, like, a counselor, and then that suddenly popped into my mind, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. And I think Naviance can help students have an idea in what direction they can go in. Naviance.
Well, for me, Naviance was a really great experience. For this program, Naviance, it's for the strengths exam test. I was really excited to figure out some of the jobs, and unbelievably, I figured out and understood, like, some of my strengths and skills that I have that I actually didn't know. So, for example, one of them was, I'm not too sure, but I think it was responsibility. One of the job choices was lawyer, and I actually never knew that I had the skill and talent to be a lawyer because I was really excited for that.
So as far as our middle school students are concerned, the biggest benefit that I see is that early exposure. I think, especially as a counselor working in our college career center, I learned so much about the process. And I just can't drive home enough that the earlier you start, the better. And it's about gaining knowledge and having these conversations early. And that's what Naviance allows us to do, is to have these conversations, whether it's with our students or with our families. We now have a communication and a team that we're building to guide them to get our students to where they need to be. With our seventh graders, we've had them do the career cluster assessments as well as our Strengths Explorer assessments, both of them giving our students an idea of what their strengths are and what career pathways that they may best fit into. Again, it's not giving them the 100% answer, but it's giving them areas to explore and maybe identify other things they want to do outside of school to explore those areas deeper, whether it's job shadowing, volunteering. For me, it's important as a counselor because I can see them grow. I can see their likes. I can see their dislikes. And together, we can create this conversation in this amazing one-stop shop that allows us to document their progress. It allows us to connect with the families, to email families through Naviance, and really open up that bigger conversation. Each and every year, we're going to build on that. Aside from exposure to these assessments, it also gives us an opportunity to get our 7th and 8th graders used to using Naviance. By senior year, they are using this heavily with Common App to apply to their schools, upload transcripts, get letters of recommendation, and we certainly don't want them you know, becoming familiar with this program their senior year. By having them already used to this program, understanding its functions, understanding what it's capable of doing, they will be proficient and comfortable in the next process of being both college and career ready.
As Mrs. Leonardo mentioned, another tool of Naviance is Family Connection. Family Connection is a customizable planning portal for students and families. It includes goal setting, college research tools, course planning, career exploration resources, and individual learning plans. Let's hear from a few of our ABC parents about this wonderful tool.
I actually, you know, started using Naviance after I went to the training that Mrs. Leonardo gave us. So before I logged into the website, I always feel like, you know, it's so much information, so many links, and I always get lost. So now I feel very comfortable when I go to the Naviance Family Connection website. You know, I do the research on the college career, you know, the explorations and the college researches, and I feel like I have more to offer to my students, my daughter, who's in the ninth grade. I think it's really, really a good time for us to start it as early as possible.
Okay, well, the Family Connection piece, I think, helped her get organized. It was easy to see all of the colleges she's applying for, along with her teachers' names, whoever she needed a recommendation from. It was just really easy to click. In comparing it a little bit with 2 years ago, when Naviance wasn't there, our son went through this application process. You know, he's now in college at the University of Oregon. I'm able to compare what we had to go through 2 years ago with our son when he went through the college application process. And there was a lot of pieces that we had to obtain from counselors, from teachers, and it was all over the place. Now with our daughter, she was able to complete a survey that helped her teachers know a little bit more about her and her counselor as well. So when she did ask for these letters of recommendation, everyone had the same information. So we weren't piecing it together. And it was at like a one-stop shop. So she was able to go there, ask for them. She was able to know what she was missing for each college. So it was really a great tool for her to organize herself. Well, I believe all of our ABC families need guidance. And with Family Connection, it's a tool for both the parent and the child. So I think the Naviance will help guide the families through the process in a much smoother way.
Another tool with Naviance is the Common App. This allows schools to securely send student college application forms electronically. Currently, ABC has 3,631 active senior applications in Naviance.
Really, at first I was like, whoa, I don't know what college I should go to. But then with Naviance, I was able to see, okay, my test scores are this. I want to stay close. I want to stay far. So Naviance gave me the ability to search all these colleges instead of having to go to each college website and having to look up the information. Naviance just made everything quick and efficient and overall helped me.
Using Naviance, I got to see that there was more information on how to apply this. Especially with getting the recommendation letters from my teachers or counselor to the Common App website. So it helped. That was quick. That was easy. It was simple. Just contact my teacher through this, and the letters just went in. And then even verified me through my email that they have received my letters of recommendation. I think through Naviance, students will benefit of having everything in one place. Having information, having where they might apply, having letters of recommendations, contact with their counselors. And I know all you guys didn't use it 1 year, but I even see my sister in middle school, she's in 7th grade, and she just signed up for Naviance and all these sites. And Naviance is definitely one that where she'll be able to keep all information together for later use in high school and even apply to college.
Naviance is very important for students because it helps you not only with as I mentioned, your letter of rec process and sending your transfer, but it also helps you keep track of where you stand with your college applications, and there's a section where you can create your resume and apply for scholarships. So there's basically a list, and so if you're a senior or even a junior, then that's a very helpful tool for all students.
Naviance is a really huge benefit to have as a student, especially as a senior, and I wish I would have had it as a freshman, because as a senior, it's kind of awkward for me to say, I don't really know what I want to do yet, and it's not that I have no vision of where I'm going in life, it's just that I need a little bit more of a narrow set on what I want to really do. Because I see myself as a person with many strengths, and sometimes that can be a curse in its own because you don't really know where you're going to end up. So I think it's really helpful when I took the strengths explorer test that it showed me different paths that I could take and different routes that I could take with things that I'm interested in. I think ambiance really helps students see more than what they're used to seeing or what they're used to hearing from teachers or from their parents or from themselves or their peers. It gives you a wider range of what you can do. And these students see that and they appreciate it because they have more of a sense of themselves after using it.
In addition to Naviance being new to all middle schools this year, it is also the first year implementation for Artesia, Cerritos, and Tracy High Schools. Each new school has already seen the benefits of increasing student, college, and career readiness and are planning their next steps.
While Naviance Succeed will be useful for college and career readiness, my students will be able to use this tool to explore different careers and college options. The Strength Explorer assessment will provide my students a variety of career options available to them, find careers matching their interests and skills, and get information about colleges and other educational opportunities and create plans for reaching their career goals.
One of the biggest things when you're talking about college and career readiness for students and their families is to have...
Thank you, Mr. Green. That's probably enough. Yeah. Okay, they got the message.
Look at the camera.
Yeah, that one was a little different.
Any questions?
That must go away.
Yeah, I still want to echo Mr. Searcy's comment. All of these students were very articulate. All of these parents very engaged. What strategy will the school district have to reach the kids that time and time again don't take advantage of all these wonderful investments that the school district makes?
Well, I think that we're going to have to just reach out to each of the students to find out, you know, what their interests are, what we can do to help better prepare them for their next step after high school and that kind of thing. So all along the grade levels. I think one of the things, you didn't see it in that clip, but discussing this with a school that had Naviance in place, is their guidance counselors learned a lot more about their kids in 7th and 8th grade after they took that career inventory, that interest inventory or strengths finders, whatever it's called. So they knew more about their students and what their strengths and weaknesses are and what their, you know, they did say career planning quite a bit there. It's not all about college. They do have stuff in there about, hey, if you want to be a forest ranger or a mechanic, what would you do for that kind of thing. And
do we have enough guidance counselors to support that? Because that has been the ongoing issue. When a guidance counselor has hundreds of students,
well,
how can they give them that individual attention?
This was the when we presented this to the guidance counselors, they said this would help them do their job better. Mm-hmm. And they wanted this. I mean, Jessica's email's there. There were some others. When they saw, you know, it's a one-stop shop. It's got everything in it. The high school guidance counselors talked about how much time they spend gathering information for college applications and that kind of thing. That if it would all be in one place, it would save them a lot of time and money. The access to college scholarships is incredible. They basically take the kids' interests, their income level, where they're going to go to school, and send them a list of what scholarships they qualify for, and that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons when I talked to a John Carroll parent 2 years ago, they said that's the part of the tool that they enjoyed the most was the access to different scholarships. This is a John Carroll parent, so, you know, so, but don't think that we're not going to try to take care of the kids that maybe don't want to go to college. We're just going to do everything we can to take care of them. This is just a tool for all of our students that I think we should have.
Okay. And I guess that was my question. This would, it would be available and encouraged for all students.
Everybody.
Yeah,
sure.
And then, but also, you know, I noticed, you know, in the Houston school district, you know, and their dropout rate, you know, goes from 22% to 12.5%. You know, those typically aren't college-bound kids we're talking about. So it seems like, at least in that instance, it raised...
Right. Going back to the conversation I had with the guidance counselor from the middle school last year, she said that a lot of her kids started to see the relevance of doing well in school to get to wherever they wanted to go, whether it's college or being an auto mechanic or whatever. Because you know, it starts to say, hey, you can be this, but you have to do these things to be this. So.
Yes. Just a couple of things. Test scores, and it said something about income level in there. Those being stored in this database, that leaves me concerned about data security.
Yeah, I don't think anything's stored in there that would violate FERPA or anything like that. Okay. I don't think that there's any.
I just wonder if we had to take it to, if it would, there would be unintended consequences on our data security side.
I don't believe so. They've worked with focused school districts already, so they kind of know, what data they can get and that kind of thing.
And it's all in the cloud.
Right. Well, it's, yeah.
What they just keep telling me.
But if they get to the cloud from our IP address, then it becomes our loss.
Yeah, I don't think there's any issue with that.
Apparently there's some big cloud out there.
There's a cloud. Data lives there.
I don't know what happened there.
And this is $49,000 a year.
Yes,
how,
sir.
How does that relate to the salary of one guidance counselor?
It's less than, that's considerably less than one guidance counselor. It's a fringe benefits.
And they want this because it makes their life easier. They can be more productive.
That's what they told me. Yes, sir.
Susan.
It is another test, right?
Yeah.
It's an online interest survey. Yes, sir.
We're getting a lot of feedback on more and more tests. That's just one comment. But have the guidance counselors or you or any of our staff, have we looked at the website to see how all of these things work and how easy it is to access it?
Yep.
And have we brought in parent group to look at?
That's we haven't brought in a parent group to look at it. I know that we went through several of the modules in St. Lucie when we were looking at this a year and a half ago.
What's the urgency of doing it today?
The sooner that we engage with the company, the sooner we can start to train our staff to get them ready to implement this.
I have a question. How many, it's a feeling. I'm the supportive parent. I'm already calling. Do you SuperScore, SATs? Do you do ACT? What do you do? And all over the place. And Eddie, you look up how many undergraduates and do they have this? So I wasn't waiting for a guidance counselor, but they are very much substituting for parents. And I'm not saying that parents it should be useful to all, but the guidance counselors were very excited about this.
Yes, ma'am.
And, I know when I was in there, they were like, we even have an online resume and things like that. About the software, in my mind's eye, I'm seeing that you would be able to see, Johnny, has Florida Gulf Coast, Harvard, Yale, he's missing this, he needs that, and all that. Does it tell also what the school itself accepts, like what they don't accept ACT and they need it?
Yeah,
not seeing the screenshot.
Correct. Yes. If you, the one senior was talking about that, it tells you what the colleges need and where you fit, what that college, their minimum acceptance level is for an SAT score, their minimum ACT score, that kind of thing. You put in your scores, it kind of tells you. Where you stand a good chance of getting accepted, but you can ask, could I go to Harvard, and it would tell you.
And the other question would, will it show comparison from school to school, and how many schools can you get on one page? Like,
I'm not familiar
okay.
with the screenshot that,
sure.
that much.
Do we still offer the ASVAB? And if so, what grade?
I think it's 10th grade.
The military, it's
right.
like the vocational aptitude battery or something?
Yes.
Do we still offer that?
We do, but it's on a volunteer basis. Sign up to take it, and I believe it's 10th grade.
Okay.
So this basically will, it will allow the school to take the place of the parent in putting all of this together, as far as the college app and all that business. Is that what you're saying?
The student and the family would still enter the information that they need to enter into the database, into the system.
Is it available individually? Like if the district weren't to do it, and I wanted my son to be part of this?
I don't believe it's available for individual purchase. Individual schools can purchase it.
Okay.
But I don't believe individuals can purchase it. Well, I do. While we're talking about individual schools, is it contemplated that this would be included with our public charters as many of our other technology platforms? Yeah. Basically, in conversation with the company, typically what they do is they enter into an agreement with the traditional schools, either the district as a whole or a set of schools, and then they approach the charter schools that are in that area to see if they're interested.
Or a different fee?
Negotiated fee.
Yeah, I just, what's appealing to me is getting the kids started early and recognizing their skills and getting them thinking about things that they may not have thought about. So, and the access, I understand that with the common application, that will be useful for a diversity of universities, and it will help them keep track of everything. So even though it helps, I think that on the contrary, instead of replacing the parent, it's really creating that responsibility for the child and providing them an interface where they can keep track of all their recommendations, of all the requirements. And so I think it will be a helpful tool. And again, you know, with the caveat that it usually all the stuff that we do is helpful to those kids who are already have the helicopter engaged parents. And the challenge is, how are we going to reach the kids that don't so this can be useful to them? Because at least in school, they'll have the technology. And I think that because the guidance counselors are going to be so crucial, I think it would be helpful for the board to get an idea of what the ratio is at the middle school level and at the high school level of how many kids does one guidance counselor have to work
sure.
with at the middle school and the high school level, so we can get an idea of how realistic it is that they're going to get that one-on-one support that they might need to do this. And then my expectation is that although we have site-based management at the schools, this is going to trump that, and all schools are going to embrace it and integrate it because it's a district initiative, not something that anyone can opt out of, because that's always a concern
in terms of programs. I just want to say that brought something to mind, and I would like Ms. Fang to put for the next discussion meeting. I'd like to know the ratio of students to guidance counselors, because if anybody's going to the high school on the first day of orientation and seeing the lines out the door and the rescheduling, and even just on any day, they must have a lot of stock in aspirin. It's amazing, and I just would, I don't know if we're falling short if they're facilitating all this correlation and all this, showing students who are now supposed to be young adults the opportunities that maybe their parents are not there to do, and they have to do it themselves, and so the guidance counselors are helping and guiding them as they should. Are we not as beefed up as we should be? I know that's a whole other budget issue and everything, but I would like to know where we're falling short so that it's at least on our radar. And maybe we're doing that fine, but I would like to put that information.
You don't know if you don't ask.
Well, I have it on the list. So.
Your next item?
Next item should be possible school grades. Local school grade proposal. So, are you switching over to PowerPoint? So I have Mr. Green and Mr. Taylor here to share some information with you. We've talked a little bit about coming up with a different way to measure our schools, their effectiveness, other than just the school letter grade that's issued by the state, which is primarily based on one standardized test. So I tasked the accountability department, the guys in the accountability department, all two or three of them, with coming up with some different ways to measure the success of our schools. So we're going to show you a little bit of information, some ideas we've come up with to kind of give our schools more of a report card rather than just one single letter grade. Some of it is in the form of a letter grade, A, B, C, D, or F. Other of the data points we've looked at, exceeding expectations, meeting expectations, or below expectations. The push over the next few years appears to be more towards performance grading, competency grading, that kind of thing. So You know, it's not whether you get an A, B, C, or D. It's whether you're meeting expectations or exceeding expectations or so on. So, Mr. Green, you want to take over?
Thank you, Dr. Mandel. Good afternoon. I put the word draft in here several times. I want to stress that this is a draft maybe to get your feedback and just as something to kind of put out there for a conversation starter. Just to talk about a few of the things we're going to include, and you're going to see a visual picture. And it's very basic. It's very draft. It's not in any kind of final presentation mode. But one of the things that would surely be included would be the state's grade. That's what everybody hears. That's what we know about. That's what realtors want to know when parents are moving to the county. It's the reality. Well, the state grade, as we've shared with you now, is proposed. We've calculated proposed grades, and we've shared those with you. We calculated them on proficiency only, no learning gains last year because new tests, they're not going to calculate learning gains. And we used the old or current cut scores, which we know are going to change. And hopefully over the next few weeks, we're going to start learning what those new cut scores, and we'll go back and adjust that proposed grade. And then eventually, we'll have the actual grade. So on the school report card or the school scorecard, first thing is here's the state grade based on those state assessments. Can't ignore that. The other thing that we've done is gone back and looked at the parent survey data. And there's a question on the parent survey that says, what grade would you give the district and what grade would you give your child's school? We went back and tallied all the English and Spanish surveys, the number of parents that answered an A, a B, a C, a D. We gave each one a point, just like a GPA point. If 10 people picked A, that's 40 GPA points. So we calculated that out to a 3.2 or whatever it might be for each school. So they're going to get a parent satisfaction grade in this scenario. The bottom note you'll see on it is just to please remember, you don't have to be able to read it, that this is draft and preliminary. Nothing is in stone, but it's for your reaction and feedback. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a gains column of some kind to see if they're making expected growth. At elementary, that VAM is only available for 4th and 5th graders, so we're looking at some SAT-10 data for early on. Are they increasing in their national percentile? Or are they maintaining a very high national percentile? So we're looking at ways to calculate gain or expected growth measures. You'll see
so
that.
Can we go back before we leave that slide? That's something for all of us to make sure we understand is that a lot of times the school grade, especially this year, it's going to be based on proficiency. There's no growth component. Well, speaking of proficiency, a lot of times over the last couple of years, we've had teachers say, all of my students were proficient on the FCAT, or all of my students were proficient on the FSA, yet my teacher VAM score came back as needs improvement. That's because the state has calculated what they believe the student should score. And if the student doesn't reach that score, then it's a needs improvement for that teacher. So if a student was a low level or high level 3 or mid level 3 the year prior and they don't score a mid or high level 3, but they stay in level 3, so they're a lower level 3, they're proficient. So the teacher will say, hey, see, my kids still got, all my kids were level 3, now they're all level 3. But if those kids didn't score what their VAM target was set by the state, which we don't know, then there needs improvement. So we've been able to calculate, you know, a VAM for each school and whether the school has actually met that VAM score or not. So you could see a school that has an A grade, but it needs improvement. Because even though they scored enough points by proficiency to get an A, their students may not have made as much growth as expected.
And you may see an F school with a exceeding gain column because they didn't get all the way to level 3s, but they moved the majority of their students above the expected right. growth for each of the students.
How does the state know what the students should be learning?
Yep.
How does the state know how much they should improve?
The covariant adjustment model. So there is a formula that takes all the students in the state who take the assessment. It's a simultaneous model that says, let's look at, okay, you are this ESE category. You have been retained. You're in this grade. And they compare you to all the other students who meet those other 10 characteristics, and they look at the average amount of growth for similar students with similar characteristics. So this is what they call average growth in average instruction around the state, and then you are set a target, and then you're either above or below that in your expected growth. So it looks how others are performing on that same assessment.
Yes, Chairman, if I may, and something to keep in mind with that is when you look at BAM, there are professional educators that have done research on BAM, and some of them say that it works. And there's a lot of research out there also that says that is not accurate. So, it's just what flavor do you like and what flavor do you support? And our state happens to support that flavor. But there's a lot of teachers have shown us some of the research that they've done.
And at a school level, it's much, much more statistically accurate when you're looking at a larger sample size than maybe a teacher with only 22 students and one. Anyway, again, this is for discussion. These are what we have in today's scorecard. It may not be what ends up in the final scorecard. So already we've started talking about the SAT 10. We have the moonshot moment, 50th percentile. So maybe we're looking at the expected of 90%. And, so there's other ways of looking at expected that we're going to consider. If we move on to the next slide, we've included attendance. We've looked at an average. That's one of our initiatives. We've had through EARFL. We've had through district initiative over the past couple of years. We've done some research on what should be the percentages. We know less than 90%. Is chronically bad for a student. That 95% is where you want to be and higher. So again, we have set some targets around the percent of students attending on a daily basis based on their days enrolled. And we've color-coded those on the three levels, exceeding, meeting, and below. And again, those cut scores will be refined and reviewed by other individuals. Discipline, we're looking at a discipline measure as well. We have the disproportionality, we have lots of considerations that we're looking around discipline. So one of the first measures we're looking at is removals. So it's the percent of students with at least one in or out of school suspension for the year. And looking at those metrics, we know that the 5% is tier 3 in the MTSS, multi-tiered system of support. That tier 3 intervention, which students who would be suspended would be a tier 3 level, you want that at 5% or lower. So we've done some research around why we've selected some of these percentages. Again, they are going to be open for conversation for quite a while, I'm sure. And we've put those together into just a concept of creating a scorecard bigger than just the state's grade. So for example, and remember this is proposed grades you saw before, that will change. Those cut scores will be different. We know that from the state. But to Dr. Rendell's point, using the current data that we have, a school like Fellsmere might receive an F from the state when it's only a proficiency model. The new cut scores, they might receive a D or a C. We don't know that yet. But if this were actual data, but their parents are rating the school at a B, and you can look at the color codes and see they're meeting their gains expectations, they're exceeding in attendance and exceeding in discipline measures. So if you can kind of look across the differences, not all the schools get, the charters don't give our parent surveys, so you'll see some NAs, and there's just some different variances at some schools we've got to work on for consistency of data. On the next slide,
can we stay there for a second? So what we're trying to show you is different data points to look at the performance of the school. So if we relied solely on the state grade, then that's the tan column in the middle. Those are, and again, as Mr. Green said two or three times, those are the grades we believe based on the old formula using the FSA results that we have, again, unmatched from October to February FTE, so we don't know really which way that would go up or down. Word we're getting from the state very recently, as late as last week, is that they will not be using the levels, the formula to calculate grades that we've been used in, that has been used in the past. So they're going to change the amount of points you need for an A, the amount of points you need for a B, the amount of points you need for a C, and so on. So it could mean that a lot of those grades would change. It could mean that none of those grades will change. So we still don't know what, if our schools are given grades by the state what they will be. We just know that right now that's the best guess based on the information from last year.
Is that first column, did it say Citrus Elementary F, Dodgertown F, Bellevue F?
Correct. This is, remember we shared that information with you a couple months ago?
We shared, and that is if the state did not change the grading formula, which we know they are going to.
Yeah, now they've said they are going to.
So they come out and said if they're going to decouple the individual scores with the school scores?
What they said is they're going to change the formula.
And we know the B range has to change because it doesn't meet its 5% difference between the ranges in statute now. So we know there will be some change. What impact it has to those grades, we don't know. I think the major point is that whatever report card, the first thing we'll have is the state's grade. We will update this to the actual grade once it's released, just so people can see this is what it is on the state data, but there are other indicators that we want to look at as a school, community, and as a district to help gauge how our schools are doing in multi-metric.
But by having a report card such as this or a scorecard such as this, you have more ways to evaluate the performance of the school. So Felsmer was a good example. Glendale is another. If the state formula reveals that Glendale is an F, but the parents are rating it an A, it's meeting its gain, so the students are getting a year's worth of growth in a year's worth of time. Their attendance is exceeding, or they're meeting expectations, below expectations on discipline. So that's where I sit down with the principal and say, okay, you're great, you're green in this column, you're yellow here. What are you doing in this red column? What's going on here? Why are you in the below expectations for discipline? Talk to me about policies and practices, policies and procedures you have in place, what's going on, that kind of thing. So it's different ways we can evaluate the performance of the schools.
Yeah, looking at this, I think there are two things that I would like to see reflected in any type of document, and maybe one of them is more relevant to the elementary schools. But we have been spending a lot of time on our moonshot moment. And I think that any scorecard for the elementary school should have a column that tells us each year how are those third graders doing to reach that 2018 goal and beyond, because there has to be accountability. So I think that there should be an additional column that reflects that. I don't know what that would look like.
Well, as I mentioned earlier on the SAT slide, we have started the conversations because we know it's around the 50th percentile, so we can put that measurement there and where they're at and meeting towards it. So that's something we have had internal conversations about.
Right. And then a second one that I think is important, and I don't know how it would be reflected, is something that gives the parent and the community a sense of stability in the school. So something relative to teacher retention or teacher satisfaction. Because I know that every school has a survey for their teachers, and when we get that information, it's always compiled, everyone together. But I do think that if we take the time to do these surveys for parents, for teachers, I know in when Dr. LaCava was on the board, and I don't recall if Dr. Adams did this, but we would actually meet and look at what were the big items that parents complained about, that students complained about, and what are we doing about them, so that the community knows we survey you, but it's not just check, we survey.
Right.
It's check, we survey, and we give you feedback. So I think that's something relative to teacher satisfaction or, something around, I don't know what it would look like. I don't know what anybody else thinks, but I think that we need to flesh it out a little bit more, because those things obviously are a reflection of how the school is doing.
Yeah, we actually had a column for teacher attendance, because that's usually a really good indicator of the morale of the school, is teacher attendance. And we can't necessarily grab that data reliably for last year, so we're tracking that data this year so that we can add it as a column in the future.
And why can't we track it reliably with all the technology we have?
Mr. Green, any...
96 things we used last year?
Let's just say we don't have the systems built to quickly grab that. It's in like a certain subsystem, an ASOP, and it's not that it's not there. It would have just taken an inordinate amount of time to put it together in an easy way, so we're going to try to get it like in the focus are other areas where we can analyze it easier rather than a lot of manual work to do that.
Make them call that number.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so part of the challenge of grabbing that data is if you look solely at ASOP numbers, so the subsystem calling, if a teacher is in training at our direction, but they call ASOP, you know, you have to sift through that data and see, are they absent because they're sick? Are they absent for personal reasons? Are they absent for training? We don't want to, for training is actually a good thing. You know, that's not a morale issue. So you have to kind of parse that data. And so we've got a method this year we think that we'd be able to parse that as we go.
So we do have middle and high school. And we just quickly, there's a last question slide, but we do have middle, just example, middle schools.
So, again, Storm Grove is an example of what the value of looking at more than one data point. Because when you get an A from the state, oh, you got an A. Parents, oh, they got an A. But then when you look at their gains, according to the BAM, their students maybe didn't perform as well as they were projected to. Still earned enough points for an A. So usually we're all happy with that. But we might want to dig deeper and say, so which numbers, you know, what are we doing to make sure that we can get into the yellow or green in that section next time?
And we do have high school and other schools as well. So one of the challenges that we have is as we're digging into it, we need to make sure that we have consistent data from all these different points, that enough parents are responding. So I think it'll lead into some discussions around data consistency.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, one of my concerns, I think this is a great idea, because the example is obvious right here. We need to go beyond the mindset that we've had in the past, where in A school we have nothing to worry about. You know, it's continuous improvement. My concern, and it goes back to your previous slide in terms of the discipline, is that I have shared this with Dr. Rendell, and I have said this at a previous workshop. You know, my concern, especially around the discipline piece, is that I do hear the conversations from some teachers that are being told to not suspend African-American students. And so we could work on fixing those numbers. Those numbers could become yellow or green because we intentionally are manipulating those numbers. And I don't think that that is the intent. The intent is to do the work so those numbers go down because there's discipline. But the intent is not to create spaces for teachers where they don't feel safe and they feel like they have no recourse because they're being told you can't suspend those kids. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I think I've heard it enough times. I always believe the truth is somewhere in the middle. I'm only hearing one side of the story. I can't go into school and ask because that's not my place. But the only thing I can do is bring it up for consideration. So I think that this is beautiful as long as we don't start working to fill the scorecard the way we taught to the test, because then that's going to negate everything. Then everything's going to become like AA, green, 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 because we figured out how to work our own system to look good. And the idea is to do the work and
right.
Be good. Mm-hmm. So that's a concern.
That's it. We just wanted to share the concept of a multi-metric scorecard, if you will, for schools.
So I put it on the agenda to make sure that this is something the board would want me to pursue to flesh out and have ready sometime in January, you know, a final product to share.
Absolutely. I think it would be good with that addition that Ms. Jimenez said with the moonshot moment.
I wrote it down.
Okay, great.
Just one question. The meeting for attendance, you said, was we know that it's about 95%, but the bottom end of the range was 93%. Are we changing what meeting or proficient means to say, okay, well, if the data suggests it's 95%, but we're going to say it's 93%, I want to make sure that we're aligning our goals with our data,
yeah.
If you will, what the literature suggests or what the real world outcomes, you know, if we're going to make competency based.
Yeah, so one of the things that we are going to do based on this conversation today is we're going to be turning this over. We have a district data review team, a large group of people who do, they have researched attendance discipline. So that's why I wanted to stress this is really draft. They have people from MTSS. We're going, now that we know that you're interested, let them pull that research, adjust these numbers, talk about where that should be, and come back with some suggestions. So this was preliminary to give you the concept of the color code ranges and what might be on a multimetric system, but it certainly wasn't to say these are the final cut scores.
But 93 wasn't an arbitrary number. Mr. McMahon did a lot of research on correlating what attendance rates at highly effective schools, you know, where they fell. And so I believe between 93 and 96.9, that's why he came up with those numbers, is that's a range where schools that show good academic achievement fall in that area usually.
Thank you.
So yeah. But I know he didn't just pull 93 out of the air.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of work in this situation.
And I just thought, okay, well, it's 95 plus or minus 2. And that's the way Mr. McMahon thinks.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to add a third grade column to the elementary schools or a progress on the moonshot moment, however we define that, and then try to have something better for you guys in January.
Anything around teacher? Teacher attendance. Did you have a better way of finding that out? Summation issue?
Teacher retention, attendance, because that's attention. Very like that. Important. No good teacher, no good school.
We can go back and get the data from last year, so because that's all data from last year. So we can do that.
Well, we can know turnover, right? And turnover
that's
is one of those balanced scorecard indicators.
That's easier to grab.
Good organizations to track.
I would like to say, and thank you for saying that you would go back and get data, but I mean, just want to put it in the hop one more time. That's great, but I recall that you said that's a lot of work.
Should we do attendance
on teacher? Is that what we want? Or attendance retention? Is that easier for you to get and will give us at least an indication?
Turnover.
I just don't want to task them with a lot of.
We'll look at a couple different.
We should be tracking that attendance because every time we have to go before the calendar committee, we want to know are they go when we do the holidays. So just because
teachers
doesn't mean we don't need it. And in the past, when we've worked on the calendar and we've asked for the data, it's been given to us. So, you know, it's not a complicated thing. I just don't know what hiccup has happened that all of a sudden we can't get information that we traditionally have been able to get when we need it. This is not a new thing we're asking for.
No, and that's so let us go back and look at what teacher data is readily available for, you know, the easiest to calculate. And again, we were just trying to put up enough pieces for you to get a reaction to. Is that something you wanted to move forward with us? And we appreciate the feedback of extra components.
So, superintendent's evaluation timeline. In your blue packet, there's a couple documents, several actually.
How you feeling?
Oh, I feel good, thanks. I'm going to go to the doctor. So the very first page, the one with draft stamped on it, that was a timeline that Ms. Steng had put together way back at the before I think I even came. We haven't been following the timeline necessarily. So I wanted to get some feedback from you all in this format as to one thing is, do we want to use the evaluation tool or protocol that is attached, because that's what you've used in the past? And B, do we want to set some dates for, you know, we need to do mid-year, so to speak, and you know, final action and that kind of thing. So we need to start looking at how we set this up and put it in place and start to execute it.
Thank you for bringing this forward.
I recall that the last 2 years with the previous superintendent, this document that we have here is only half of the evaluation. The other part of the evaluation was a list of the goals with specific accomplishments
accomplishments around those goals, and the superintendent created a binder to document everything that was done. So I don't know that if, because this is a transition and the board wasn't clear in creating that, I know that you have goals that we discussed. But I think that this document, before we started identifying the goals and the artifacts to prove it, everything used to be integrated into this, which was kind of awkward because not everybody looked at the goals, and so some of it was just anecdotal. Some people looked at goals and held the superintendent accountable. So we were trying to have, as a board, uniformity so the evaluation in a way would be fair. That, you know, we're all kind of saying, okay, we're looking at goals and we're looking at professionalism and traits of a professional, the professional standards. So I really don't know what the board is thinking, because at this point in the game, we can't introduce anything new because it would be totally unfair. So it almost sounds like this is what we have, and this is what we were trying so hard to get away from.
I wanted to just, because I did fill that out, and I think Ms. McCain can help out too. There's a missing piece. She is correct, and I wish I could show you. This was sort of how am I doing in your major, overall communication and community engagement, and we would tell how we feel you're doing in these communication skills and all these different areas. But the piece that the superintendent provided to us would be the goals, and then the measures of standards, and then she had listed what she did to meet those. So I don't know if you had seen that. I think Ms. Jimenez makes a point that this is what we had to change, and then say, by the way, you're halfway through your year, we're going to change the format. But I would like to see, I would like you to see what that was, because the goals that you had and that we agreed and voted on now would be in a document that had shows you show the measurable, which we should be aware of anyway because we see it about us, but that showed where you're at and how complete you are and in that.
I seem to recall we had something like that. I had like an area one and then steps out.
There were measurable outcomes.
Sorry. Yes.
Yes, sir.
And then if we see that, then I mean it's pretty...
Yeah, we can use that to generate what Ms. Jimenez and Ms. Simchek are talking about.
I'm just bringing it up because it's not here. When you look at your documentation, it's not here, and I want to make sure that there's a record of the fact that there's more than this. This is what we used years ago. Thought that was
institutional. This is subjective to each board members, but the other one was your chance because we do this in the comfort of our home or wherever we want to do it.
Right.
That piece was you telling us, you had tasked me, this is how I succeeded. And that's very useful.
Yes, and I think that, we could work on something together. I mean, there are a number of instruments, like 360 reviews. Not that I'm proposing that, but there are different inventories that address different leadership facets and things like that. But to Ms. Menes's point, it's not fair to say, oh, we're going to change the standard by which you're measured midstream. We have our rubric. Right? Now we're going to grade and move forward. So that's something we can consider next time we set goals, right?
Yes.
So am I understanding that you're, obviously we're making to bring this forward, but we are then behind on our mid-year review?
Yes.
And we did adopt, we didn't adopt the instrument. That's what we're talking about now.
Right. Basically, I'm going back a step or two. I had a discussion with Ms. Stang two weeks ago, and said, I'm getting towards the middle of the year of my first year, and how do I get a mid-year evaluation? How do I know how I'm doing and all that? And she says, you need to sit down with the board, and you guys need to discuss this. You guys need to get this set up. So... This is what we're doing.
I apologize. We've been charging.
No, I didn't know if I was supposed to be doing it. Or
It's our job, yes. So, suggestions for?
Well, it sounds like, you know, maybe this is an opportunity for us to get that mid-year review underway.
Well, we missed the adoption of the evaluation instrument.
Next agenda.
We'll put that on the next agenda, if that's all right with everyone.
Yeah.
And then individually, we'll move it to ourselves to schedule some time.
And I would like to add, though, I don't think it would be unfair to ask the superintendent to provide us documentation of where he's at with all his goals, because those goals were adopted, you are familiar with them, and even though we didn't create the instrument to evaluate it, that would really help us to do an evaluation that takes into account not just our subjective perceptions, but the actual work that we've done. And to Mr. Frost's point, I think it would be interesting for this board to discuss in the future a possibility of 360 evaluations, and I think not just for the superintendent, but for all of your high-level administrators, your executives, because
yep.
I do believe that there is value and value to our employees to know that there's accountability. We have tremendous accountability for teachers, and I think that accountability has to go around. And I know that the nay side of that is, well, people are going to be subjective and blah, blah, blah. Well, even the evaluations of the teachers have a certain subjective component, and their salaries are attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if teachers are subjected to subjectivity, there is no reason why a high-level administrator should be subjected to that in the attempt to get a good picture of what is going on. So maybe that could be discussed at a future date, obviously not for this evaluation.
So if we have this instrument before us, if we're talking about a next agenda, we have this instrument before us. In addition, we would want the progress report on the goals.
Excellent. Yes.
And as the actual instrument, if that's what we're adopting.
Is this something that would, I mean, because technically we could put it on tonight and someone could make a motion with these things. Is it something that can wait until next meeting? In your mind, Dr. Randall?
Yes, because the next meeting's early in January.
Okay.
It's not, we have a January 12th.
And, if you look under process, it says 5/24/2016. That's when you give your state of the district and your annual progress report. So you're giving us, I don't know if you want a midway report or if that's what's going to be.
Actually, if you go back and pull up the 100-day plan,
mm-hmm.
which we're overdue,
mm-hmm.
At the end of the 100 days, I was to give you a state of the district report. And we're kind of still waiting for the grade. So I'm prepared to give that as soon as we get our balanced scorecard done. And that actually would be the state of the schools for last year, if you think about it. So I can incorporate some data from this year, halfway through the year, what do we look like, and that kind of thing, and do that.
And just because it's a subject that I'm always interested in, I'll give an example that one of his goals was to hire SROs, and we just did. So that was the kind of things, those were on his goals, and I know he's...
Yeah, the measurable outcomes, we'll be able to check those or not.
Some of them already.
And one other thing, talking about the state of the district, Dr. Greco, what district mm-hmm. is he with?
So I think he's in Pinellas now.
I don't know.
No,
maybe it's not him, but there was a superintendent. Like last year, I saw a video of the superintendent delivering the state of the district talk at a board meeting.
Correct.
To the community. And I think that there is a value, because when we've had the state of the district before, it's a workshop, we have a PowerPoint, and and it's informative for the board. But I think that it is time that our school district does this type of state of the district on a regular level, on a regular basis, to the community.
Correct.
To our stakeholders, from our superintendent. I found that to be so powerful to hear him do that. I thought, wow, now that's transparency.
So in the same month of March, as he delivers that at a workshop, do you think that a summary of that can be then given at this same corresponding meeting in that month?
Yeah, that would be,
you know, if you could...
Like a
10-minute, 15-minute.
Yeah.
Condense it.
Yeah, I actually am very familiar with that format and was planning on doing something similar to that.
Perfect.
So.
Anyone else?
All right.
The last item on my list is a virtual school update. We will be operating our franchise, so to speak, starting in January.
Okay.
And Dr. Arnett may give us an update on that tonight. In the business meeting.
We're voting on it.
Yes, there's an action agenda item, so I'm going to call him up to the podium and have him give us an update.
Rings a bell.
That's it for my story.
Any other items? Yes, ma'am.
I just have a question. With this plan for our virtual school, has your staff had any conversations about any possible negatives to this plan? You know, you should always look at pros and cons. When they've had their conversations, has anything been brought up where someone said, you know, this is a great idea, but are there any of those?
There were some. Anytime we planned anything like that, you're always looking for pros and cons. And some of the cons to the Florida Virtual franchise, in other words, we're now teaching with our teachers the virtual courses, and we're keeping the FTE here and all of that. We still have to pay a small fee to Florida Virtual to do all of that. And we still have to pay the instructors to teach the courses. So I think we talked about it one time, when you reach a certain number of kids taking the courses, you might actually start to lose money, because you're paying a teacher now to teach all these different sections, and you're not getting the full FTE for that, because you're getting most of the FTE, but this, you're still sending Florida Virtual a small fee. So that's something to watch as a balance, to make sure we're never at the point where we're actually losing money. The other part of it is we need to make sure that we're not having kids say, you know what, I'm failing this class first semester, I'm going to go ahead and finish failing this class so I can just enroll in virtual. So we have to make sure that we're not, that was one of the other things we talked about, that we're not setting up a pathway that's going to hurt us in our traditional pathway, where kids are, the word gets out that, well, just, you don't have to go to Mrs. Smith's class first period. You can skip that because you can take it virtually next semester, that kind of thing. So we already kind of have that, but it's not as easy to do, because Florida Virtual is harder, and it just, not as many kids know about it. But the more our teachers are teaching it, the more they're going to know about it. And, you know, it's still going to be the same level of rigor. But so those are some of the things we talked about. But as far as recapturing the FTE that we're losing, that's the win. That's the huge win for us.
Yes, you're familiar with the statutes. I was having a conversation with Dr. Rendell about what the statute requires that school districts do relative to virtual school. And I guess I must have imagined this. I thought that, you know, we're supposed to have access to three. But I think at some point there was a requirement that we have a full-time offering of a virtual school. Did I imagine that?
No, there's supposed to be full-time and part-time options available.
And that's within those three.
Right, but one of the vendors, if you will, for the virtual can be both the full-time option and the part-time option. So you have to have three.
And one has to be a full-time option.
There has to be a full-time option, correct. And that's typically the Florida Virtual School selection.
And in our county, is it the Florida Virtual School selection that's already a full-time?
Yeah, but I
have to check with the doctor.
I can't answer which of the vendors offers which of the offerings here, but usually it's Florida Virtual School.
Just from friends that I know that are home school.
Yep.
Because one of the questions that I had was, when you look at the item that we have on consent for approving the Florida Virtual School contract, that item states that the money goes directly to the school district, and it talks about recalibration. And so to me that was confusing, because if this item in consent is one of the compliance, and then we have our own virtual school, I'm not understanding why we're having this conversation about recalibration if we can already do that. Because the item in consent seems to imply that. Let me read it to you.
Right. And I think Dr. Annette's going to be able to answer that question this evening.
Okay.
But it won't help if I'm consent.
I'll pull it
troublesome.
It's going to be full.
Entire consent.
Okay.
I don't want to warn you.
All right. Okay.
Sure.
All right. No, I'll ask the question at the board meeting. Why ask it twice? No problem.
Well, because hopefully the guy that has the answer will be able to give us the answer.
Oh, anything else?
Yes, ma'am.
I wanted to thank the superintendent for the document that we got relative to the employee suspensions and resignations. Mm-hmm. And I did want to ask the board if there was any interest. There's another piece of information that's missing, and it's how many people are reassigned. Because right there where it says suspension, it says 5 days or less. And there are people that have been reassigned that we are not aware of. And those are situations that I think as board members we need to be aware of. Because sometimes there are issues around it and we don't know until there's a termination or something. So that was missing. But I'm very appreciative because if you have taken the time to look at it, you can start seeing where there may be areas of concern that as a board member we have the fiscal responsibility to be paying attention to. So I'm very grateful for this information.
No other comments? This meeting's adjourned.
Just the business meeting tonight.